Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mike Florio of NBC Sports and Pro Football Talk on Twitter. It is at Pro Football Talk. He is out on the road, and he joins us now on Sports Radio 670. Mike, how are you?
Doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing good. The Carolina Panthers have a new owner, but the timing of this is remarkable. Just as Mark Cuban believes that all the ownership of pro sports teams can celebrate the de facto doubling of value with the invalidation of PASPA by the Supreme Court, did the Carolina Panthers sell for half of what they should have sold for?
Well, I don't know that it's half, but, boy, I'd like to think that if they had waited just a little bit longer, somebody else would have swooped in with a lot more than $2.2 to $2.3 billion. Or maybe Jerry Richardson could have squeezed more out of David Tepper. Because, you know, now if it really does double over the next 5 years, Tepper can essentially slice off half of the equity, sell it, make all of his money back, and still continue to control the team. So this is a heck of a purchase for him. He's getting in at the right time. Because we have this sense that wherever the extra revenue comes from, there will be extra revenue, either in increased rights fees, more people coming to games, people betting at games on each individual play, ways that teams can license their names and logos to make betting feel legitimate in various states or more legitimate, more official. There are lots of ways that they can make money, and that's what's going to drive the value of these teams up and up. And, yeah, it's a great time to be buying an NFL franchise.
So, Mike, now that we have the potential of legalized gambling in individual states or perhaps across the country if federal regulation steps in, what's the next and most important thing for the NFL to do to get ducks in a row?
Well, I think, first of all, the NFL had better seriously consider having full-time officials across the board. Even though they're never going to get every call right, they need to look like they're trying to get every call right. And if you have a key call, fourth quarter is when they're the most concerned, especially in a game where it doesn't affect the outcome of the contest, but it affects the outcome of the bet. There was a high-profile example, 2008, Scott Green, former NFL referee, made a bad call late in a Steelers-Chargers game. It was a horrible call. It swung millions of dollars illegally wagered. Now, when it's tens of millions, if not more, legally wagered, sea to shining sea, you better not have a part-time official make that mistake, because that's the first thing people are going to say. Oh, if it was a full-time official, we wouldn't have this accident happen. These folks would be buttoned up. So they need to be doing everything they can to create the impression they're getting every call right. And I think they need to take a more serious look at efficient ways to use replay, either through the replay review process or, I've said for years now, having someone in the booth who is a member of the crew, who is able to watch all of this in real time and communicate directly to the referee before they make the first call. You know, they huddle a lot on the field to make sure they get a call right. They need to have somebody who's watching everything that we're seeing at home before they make their first call, and then you have the replay review as a fallback.
Here's what I can't figure out. It was the NFL that was suing or fighting New Jersey in court, and it kept losing until eventually it made its way to the Supreme Court, and that's how this all happened. And now, immediately, the NFL's like, well, wait, now you have to pay us. Now we get a piece of this new pie, too. The disingenuousness of some of this to now say, among the other leagues, supposedly now being paid to ensure integrity, as if there wasn't motivation or incentive to already be doing that. Now, am I supposed to question integrity for all of these years before legalized gambling? It's ridiculous to me.
Well, and the NFL's been somewhat smart about this because it's been baseball and basketball at the front end of communicating with various states that have been in the process of putting wagering programs in place. West Virginia, for example, has one ready to go. But here we are at the 11th hour, literally, and there are efforts to get this integrity fee paid. And the NFL hasn't specifically asked for one, but every quote from the league, every statement that people from the league will make, they keep coming back to integrity of the game, integrity of the game, and it's a perfect way to bootstrap with this integrity fee, which is essentially money for nothing. Nevada has never done it. There's no reason to do it. You're going to get the compensation that will pay for full-time officials and plenty of other safeguards, naturally, you don't need to put your hand out and try to get a cut. And here's what they're going to do. They'll lobby Congress to pass a law that regulates gambling in all of the various states, and they'll get Congress, or they'll at least try, to get Congress to impose the integrity fee there. Then you don't have to worry about going to 50 different legislatures and saying, please give us something for nothing.
So if the reason for getting an integrity fee is, I guess, nominal, I guess, Mike, to a certain degree, it feels like that's racketeering. I mean, it's the basic issue of racketeering. It's just that they're doing it with a legal enterprise.
Well, but the thing is, what are they threatening? At least when you have somebody show up and offer you quote-unquote insurance, they say, boy, it'd be a shame if something happens to this place. There's no leverage. What can they do?
I guess what the other side of this would be is if players themselves or the unions start to sue for their usage of likenesses and whatnot represented in either gambling lines or prop bets or what have you, then you've got unions threatening to lock out or stay out of the league if they're not getting their share of the money. And that's, in theory, I guess, what that integrity fee would go towards, something toward the players to say, don't sue us, sue somebody else.
Well, they'll get their share through the increased revenues that flow in through the NFL's coffers. And I don't know that it's all been settled when it comes to the use of names for fantasy football purposes, but there's no impediment to that. And I think that was litigated at some point, and I think the players lost, that there's no intellectual property right in something that is an objective historical fact, and it's out there. And the game happens, the plays happen, the scores happen. There's nothing proprietary about that. It's part of the public domain. I vaguely recall within the last 15 years there was litigation on that point of whether or not the players have enhanced intellectual property rights as it relates to the statistics generated in the game. So I think that this is a blatant money grab by the sports leagues where all they could do is shut down. That's their leverage. Hey, if you don't pay us an integrity fee, we're going to quit playing our games. And we know they're not going to do that. So I don't think they have a leg to stand on. And if they did, legally, they'd be pushing that instead of just saying, well, we need an integrity fee. If they had anything to back that up, they'd be relying upon that as part of their argument.
We noticed a story yesterday regarding something we had discussed in this space before, and that is the rule about helmet contact, lowering one's head, use of the head, that you were very quick to say this could fundamentally alter the way football is played if they're true to what they say. It sounds like they've softened it a little bit. It sounds like they've backed away from how this is going to be enforced. Do you read it that way?
Yeah, it depends on who you listen to. I had Sean Payton on PFT Live last week, and he said he doesn't think it's going to change between the tackles running, where you have a lot of instinctive dipping of the helmet by blockers, by tacklers, by the runner. He thinks that it's going to be something that isn't called very frequently, but when they rolled this out in late March, Rich McKay, the chairman of the competition committee, said it's going to significantly change the game. And the NFL at that time pushed back against a report from USA Today that there were only 5 or 6 plays last year that would have triggered a violation. So I still don't know what is going to result in a flag. And also, you know, if we accept the premise that this is a dangerous tactic that needs to be taken out of the game, then it seems like any violation should result in an ejection. But I got the impression after talking to Coach Payton last week that there will be situations where it's simply a penalty but not an ejection. Well, how do you tell the difference? Is this like the old face mask incidental versus deliberate 15-yard, which they got rid of years ago, which was good because there was too much ambiguity? So I don't know how they're going to sift this out, and I don't know that they know yet, and the coaches need to know. They need to be able to teach the players, and I think that we're not going to know until we actually see the games that are being played. And here's the danger. You don't want another rule that is so ambiguous and so subject to interpretation that if you have a referee throw a flag for it that wipes out a touchdown, that swings the betting line late in the game, it's exactly the problem we're talking about. You're going to have people put on the tinfoil hats and say, hey, that guy's got money on the game.
Do you get the sense, Mike, that there's going to be anything done from a league standpoint or even federal standpoint on the gambling thing by the time this next season really starts? Or will it be just the states themselves living with the rules that they've created until there are more entities that get themselves together?
Yeah, the thinking is 6 to 10 states will have legalized wagering in place by week one. The question is, how quickly will Congress move? Orrin Hatch, who was one of the supporters of the law from 25 years ago that said no state wagering on sports of any kind, he vows to put something forward, and I think the NFL is going to support that. And that law is going to focus on integrity, and I guarantee you there's going to be a provision in there where a piece of the action goes to the sports leagues to help them finance their efforts to have the thing that they already should have, which is the highest possible degree of integrity.
Colin Kaepernick was present at the deposition of John Elway at Broncos team headquarters yesterday. We've followed this civil case as it has gone on. Meanwhile, as we have been watching the beginning of primary season, it appears that there are going to be some people running on the platform of using the image of Colin Kaepernick and apparently intentionally misinterpreting or misrepresenting the point of his protest as part of this, just using the image of him as something bad that somebody can run against. But is there, as far as we know from any of the, is there progress being made? Are we inching toward the possibility of a settlement with every deposition that gets taken? Do we know about the actual facts of the case?
No, and everyone has kept those quiet. We know when things are happening, but neither side has leaked any of the substantive evidence that's been generated, text messages, emails, testimony. And I can imagine that John Elway's deposition was awkward, to say the least, because the Broncos were ready to trade for him 2016 before the kneeling started. The thing that bogged it down is he had a guaranteed salary for that season, and he wasn't willing to reduce it to go play for the Broncos. So the next year, when he was available free and clear with no trade obligation, the Broncos were never even interested. And last year, it was Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, revolving door of not much of anything in Denver at quarterback. And John Elway, very conservative, supported Neil Gorsuch as a Supreme Court nominee, sent a letter in support of him. So yeah, I have a feeling that yesterday's deposition, probably one of the more lively ones of the bunch, especially since John Elway, very competitive. I don't know that competitive people can turn that gene off when it's time to sit across from a lawyer and cross swords that way. So, you know, at some point, they're going to have to put the evidence together and show, if they want to prove collusion, that there was some sort of coordination. And I have a feeling that they're happy with what they have, and at some point, if the NFL realizes that they face a real chance of losing, that's when defendants start getting very serious about settling. Early on, no way we'll settle. Then when they start to see the evidence, it's like, well, you know what, maybe we should consider settling this.
Hey, Mike, interesting story at Indianapolis. Nick Sirianni, the offensive coordinator there, apparently has given an offensive playbook test to his guys, and seems like it makes a lot of sense to me. I wonder if you've, you know, got examples of this happening before, or if guys don't like to do this, coaches don't like to do this, because there's a possibility that your players may just hate you for it.
Well, I mean, it can't be the first time this has ever happened, and you know, you want to teach the guys the playbook. There are different ways to do it, and you know, it can't make them any less cognizant of what's in the playbook. So I doubt what are they going to do, cut Andrew Luck if he fails the playbook test? I mean, that's the thing. You have to be very careful on how you set your consequences for this test, because if you start getting rid of your best players who flunk and you know, keeping the scrubs that get an A, you're not going to have a very good football team.
I like the idea, though. How uncommon is it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's the first time I've heard of it recently, but I'd be shocked if it hasn't happened at some point in the past. It's possible it's happened elsewhere, and it's just never really been news.
I like that juxtaposed with Josh Rosen getting his first opportunity out there with the Cardinals veterans and the first-team offense, because I can only imagine if you unleash his dangerous intellect on a blunt little tool like that kind of exam, what could happen.
Well, and, you know, here's the thing. We've been trying to figure out how many of these rookies are going to start this year. I mean, Rosen's going to have every opportunity because Sam Bradford can't stay healthy. Josh Allen in Buffalo, Sam Darnold in New York. And the guy to watch, I had Peter King on with me today on PFT Live. He thinks Lamar Jackson's going to be the starter in Baltimore by week 6. That'll be something if that happens. So, test or no test, it's going to be time for these guys to play this year. And you don't use that first-round pick on a guy that you want to keep on the bench for 3 years. The days of Aaron Rodgers watching Brett Favre are long gone.
Mike, thank you. Appreciate it as always. That is Mike Florio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.